pointed out from the very, very beginning, if you are ever to understand the Word of God, you must first understand dispensationalism. Because if you don't understand dispensationalism, the Scriptures are going to be a closed book to you. My, whenever I think back in my own life, when I came to a knowledge of dispensational truth, it shed a completely new light on the Word of God, and suddenly things that were deep and dark and hard to understand became very, very clear to me, crystal clear. And so this is the purpose of this study, is to very gradually each week unfold each of the dispensations for you as we reveal the plan and the purposes of God through the ages. Now, again, this is not an exhaustive study. None of the studies that I bring are exhaustive studies. The Word of God is infinite, and certainly we cannot research every detail out on this side of glory, nor does time allow us to go into every detail, I'll use another word there, because time simply does not allow, as I said. But here, as we look at the ages and the dispensations, it's important for you to realize that there are different ages and different dispensations. And again, an age is a period of time. It has a beginning and it has an end. And we've looked at the age of liberty, and it begins in Genesis 1:26, and it ends in Genesis 3:6. And so this is the boundaries of the age. Now, within that age, there has been a dispensation given by God. And again, to review for those of you who are first among us this evening in this series, a dispensation is the act of God dealing out or dispensing His will. And, of course, in the age of liberty, He dispensed innocence. And we have a perfect environment revealed within the boundaries of these scriptures. Also, forbidden fruit. They were vegetarians. They were married. God instituted marriage, and also He told them or commanded them to be fruitful and to multiply. And so within that age of liberty, between Genesis 1:26 and Genesis 3:6, these are some of the things that God dispensed to Adam and to Eve. Now, whenever that age closes, and God goes into a new age, He's going to give a new dispensation. Now, the important thing for you to fix in your mind, and I'll go over this one more time for your benefit, is that when we talk about dispensing or dispensations, dispensations cover time. They don't have a beginning and an ending as per se. The age has the beginning and the ending, and as I said a moment ago, the Lord has dispensed within that age, and some of the things He dispenses within any age have a tendency to carry on into other ages. For an example, here we have innocence. He dispensed innocence in the age of liberty. But when the age of liberty comes to a close, innocence is no longer intact. But if we go down to marriage, God also dispensed marriage, the institution of marriage, within the age of liberty. And, of course, marriage goes on all the way out here to the eternal state. And so you begin to see that whenever God dispenses something, as we move through the Word of God, we must make a determination. Is it going to be carried on to the next age, or is it going to be left behind? And so this is what we have been showing you as we go through the different ages and the different dispensations. We have been revealing to you what has been left behind in the ages and what has carried on into other ages and even on out to our day. And that's what we've been demonstrating each week on our board. And if you follow these arrows very carefully, you can see where things begin and where they leave off. Now, this evening, we're going to move on to human government. And we are going to learn that human government was dispensed to a man by the name of Noah. In each major dispensation that God has given, there is a central figure. In the first, in innocence, it was Adam. Then, in conscience, it was Abel. And this evening, as we move on to the age of the nations, now it is Noah. And God is going to dispense human government to Noah. Here on our small board, once again, as we come to another dispensation, what we have here is no place to put the board there. What we have here is four things, again, that are going to be outlined in this dispensation of human government, or the age of the nations. Now, first, God is going to dispense his will. And so, as we move on to a new age, the age of the nations, we want to see now what's God going to reveal to Noah that has never been before revealed, and what is going to carry on. Then we want to see what the responsibility was of man under this dispensation. Then we're going to witness again the failure, and then the judgment that follows. And through all of these ages and dispensations, we see that these four things are characteristic in each and every one of them. And of course, God is demonstrating to us, he's demonstrating to mankind, that no matter what environment mankind has been put under, what circumstances, that when he is tested, he fails ultimately because he is a sinner. He will in the end rebel against God, and God has to move in judgment towards him. And that's basically what we see in each one of these sections that we have on the board. In Genesis chapter 9 and verse 1, we begin to see now, first of all, what God dispenses to Noah. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth, and the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth, and upon every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth upon the earth, and upon all the fishes of the sea. Into your hand are they delivered. Every moving thing that liveth shall be food for you, even as the green herb have I given you all things. But flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, shall ye not eat. And surely your blood of your lives will I require it. And at the hand of man, at the hand of every man's brother, will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man. Now, in these early verses of chapter 9, we begin to see and witness that God turns to a man by the name of Noah. Noah has disembarked from the ark, and the animals now also have left the ark. And, of course, it is Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their three wives. There are only 8 inhabitants upon the entire face of the earth. And so now, since the earth has been purged of sin and violence because the earth was corrupted by man, now God is beginning anew and afresh. He is going to give man a new opportunity, another opportunity to obey him and to serve him. And so we want to see how man is going to fare under human government, because that's what God is going to dispense to Noah. And we want to see if Noah and his sons and the nations that follow if they obey what God has revealed to them. Well, first of all, we learn that they are to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth in verse 1. So here, the original command now was, of course, given to Adam and Eve. They were commanded by God to be fruitful and to multiply, to fill the earth. Now, as I pointed out, that is something that has never been relinquished or has never been revealed by God that it was to discontinue. So since God has not revealed that we are not to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth, then we are to understand that this is still God's will. Now, the reason God reinstitutes it here to Noah in the form of a new command is because, really, the race was destroyed by the judgment of the flood. And so, whenever we come to the first dispensing of God to Noah, one of the first things he dispenses to him is that he and his wife and his sons and their wives are to be fruitful, multiply, and it is God's will that they literally fill the earth, that the entire earth is populated by human beings. And so that means it was God's will that they spread throughout the land masses and that they occupy all the land masses of the earth. They weren't to congregate together in one place. That would be disobedience. They were to multiply on the face of the earth, and they were, as it says here, to fill the earth, populate it. And so here then, we see the command reinstituted, redispensed, reconfirmed, that they are to be fruitful and multiply. Now, that's important for you to remember in this study. So that's one thing that God reveals to Noah. Next, as we go on in verse 2, here we have something entirely new. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every fowl of the air. For the very first time, God places the fear of man upon the animal. So this is something that's being dispensed for the very first time. It had not been revealed back here in conscience, nor had it been revealed back here in innocence. So here you begin to see and understand the importance of understanding dispensationalism. We need to determine when was this revealed. And, of course, it was revealed to Noah, and then we need to determine when will it end. Well, first of all, when we consider the Lord revealing now to Noah and his family that the fear of man would be upon the animal, we must understand that in being as being a blessing to mankind. Back here in innocence, when we had a perfect environment, all of the animals of the earth were subjected to Adam and Eve. And so they were submissive. The animals were all very docile. And they obeyed Adam and Eve. And when Adam commanded, they hearkened unto his command, and they came. And of course, we know, as we have learned, that he named all of the animals of the field and all the fowls of the air. And so his very wish was their command. They immediately came and they obeyed him. Just like with a domestic animal today, whether a cat or a dog, whenever we speak to them, when they get to know us, they obey. They come and they want to try to please us. That's the way all the animals were back in the garden before the fall. But once Adam and Eve sinned against God, God cursed the earth. And whenever God cursed the earth, the curse also fell upon the animal creation. And suddenly the dinosaurs and the lions became carnivorous. Under innocence, they were vegetarians too. But after God cursed the earth, then the animals, many of them, became very vicious. And men feared animals. Because what began to happen was the animals started stalking men. So here you have a Tyrannosaurus rex, one of these great big dinosaurs with teeth like this, hunting down Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. And so they fled from the presence of the animals because they feared the animals and they feared for their lives. So when God cursed the earth, when that curse fell on the animal creation, they became very hostile against man. And man hid in caves and they fled from these carnivorous creatures. Now, that went on for a period of about 1,600 years, if you can imagine that, being stalked by animals all the time. But that went on through the Age of Determination. But now, God very graciously, as the animals leave the ark, God very graciously places the fear of man on them. Instead of man fearing them, suddenly now they fear us. And apparently God instilled that fear instinctively in them before they left the ark. Because whenever Noah opened that door, they fled immediately away from him. And that's true down to this very day. That whenever you confront a wild animal, especially in the wild, they will always try to get away from you unless you corner them. If they have to protect themselves, now that's different. But instinctively, God has instilled within them that they are going to make a flight from you. They're going to try to get away from you. And so it was revealed to Noah that God put the fear of man upon the animal, and that's going to go all the way out to the kingdom. Because in the kingdom, the curse is lifted from the animal creation, and the lion will lay down with the lamb at that time. So this is revealed for the first time. The fear of the animals now is revealed to Noah that they will fear man and flee from him. And that goes all the way through our dispensation out to the age of the kingdom. Then we move on to verse 3 where it says, "Every moving thing that liveth shall be food for you. Even as the green herb have I given you all things." Now, here we see a change, don't we? And that's what dispensations are. There are changes in God's dealing with mankind. Now, again, God's character and nature never changes. His holiness never changes. His standard of righteousness never changes. But he does change his dealings with man. Not because he is caught off guard or he doesn't know what to do with mankind, but instead it's because he has planned and purposed these changes from before the foundation of the world. So we begin out with Adam and Eve as vegetarians. They ate the herbs of the field. They ate the fruit of the ground. They ate vegetables. They were vegetarians. Now that continues on through innocence, through conscience, and it comes until the dispensation of human government. It does not change until here. Now God reveals to Noah that they can eat meat. And that is permitted. There are certain restrictions given under promise and law. Now today we are permitted to eat meat. There will be also restrictions under the dispensation of divine government. So here is an excellent example of the need of dispensationalism and an understanding of it, and the word rightly divided. You can see right here how God changes his dealings with man. Is God confused? By no means. It's just that as he comes to different points in time, he gives different regulations and rules. So to Adam, they were only permitted to eat of the fruit of the field. That was also true of Cain and Abel. But after the flood, we see a change. And the change is now that they are permitted to eat meat. They're not permitted to eat blood, So that meant it had to be strangled properly and the animal bled properly. But they were now permitted to eat the flesh of animals. And that continues all the way. It began at the flood. And that really continues consistently all the way out to eternity. There are only certain restrictions placed on it under the law. But even under the law, they were permitted to eat certain kinds of meat. Now that brings us to verse 4, which says, "But the flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, shall ye not eat. And surely your blood of your lives will I require at the hand of every beast will I require it, and at the hand of man. At the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. Whosoever sheddeth man's blood by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man." Now here we have the institution of human government. And for the very first time, God is going to put government into the hands of human beings. And this begins with Noah. Now this is something entirely new that had never been before revealed. Here we can see it was God who was governing under the age of liberty and determination. But beginning with the age of the nations with Noah, we are now introduced for the first time to human government as we know it. And government is going to continue all the way through this dispensation and go clear to eternity. Because even in the kingdom, it will be a rule of righteousness or a government by Christ. And so God is instituting government here, and he's going to test man. And of course, man is now to govern himself. He is to make laws and rules and regulations that there might be order in society. And this is, of course, now dealt out to Noah. Well, there are many different types of government. It's interesting that God does not say what type of government. We have the monarchies, we have the dictatorships, we have democracies such as we have in this country, and God does not reveal which one he desires us to use. He has left that to the decision of the leaders in any country to determine what form of government they will use to govern them. But one thing I will say is this, that all governments were originally intended now to honor and glorify God. Really, what they are is an extension of the justice of God upon the earth. And God has given the responsibility into man's hands to execute this judgment upon the earth, that the earth is free from crime and sin. Well, that brings us to responsibility. And, of course, what the responsibility of man was is found in verse 5 here. "And surely the blood of your lives will I require." Now, the word "require" there is a judicial term. And it is a reference to the laws that are now to be set down. And specifically, God points out one law that has to be a part of every government. That if man takes another man's life, then he is immediately to be put to death. If he is found guilty beyond a shadow of a doubt, then he is to lose his life. Now, you say, well, that seems very cruel. That seems very harsh. But it was very cruel, the one who committed the murder and murdered that innocent life. And so to put sin away or from the earth, God says that the murderer is to be put to death. And so here we see God really instituting capital punishment. So here we begin to establish man's responsibility under this dispensation. He is to set laws down, whether it's a dictatorship or a democracy, and those laws are to be obeyed in the land, and they are to be executed as they are needed, whether it's upon the murderer or the rapist or the criminal. No matter what order of crime it may be, there should be prescribed penalties, and they should be carried out consistently. And God never intended government to be lenient, but it is to be a sword in the hand of God to purge the earth from sin. So here then, we learn in verse 5, for the very first time, the need of capital punishment. And in verse 6, we learn why. Whosoever sheddeth man's blood by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. And of course, God places the highest esteem upon life. It's sacred in his sight. And if we allow the murderer to get away with his murder, inevitably, he will murder again. And that has been demonstrated time and time and time again. But why our judicial leaders just can't see that is beyond me. But we witness it frequently that the murderers who are simply incarcerated, whether it's through escape or they get out on parole, 9 times out of 10, they end up committing another murder. And so God's method of dealing with that was that they were to have justice executed upon them. So that's the responsibility. God's dispensed government. Now it's man's responsibility to make the laws and to enforce them. Now, how did man do under this dispensation? Anybody know? Did he carry all that out to God's glory? Did man obey God? Yeah, we've done away with it in our country, heaven forbid. But we can see the failure even in our dispensation. But let's go back here, back to this time. Let's see how they did within the age of the nations here. How did they respond to God's command back at this time? Well, let's turn to Genesis chapter 11. And here we see man's failure. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, and they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Now notice what they say to one another in verse 3. And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick, and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime they had for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build us a city, and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. Now, what act of disobedience do you see in verse 4 there? Anyone tell me? Okay, Terry? Correct. God commanded them, as we said, he reconfirms the command, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the entire earth. That was his will. And I don't believe man could ever fully populate the land masses of the earth. But here, God commands them to do so, and man's response to what God has dispensed here is failure, disobedience. And instead of going out and populating the earth, they gather together as the nations. They start forming together and they say, we want to make a name for ourselves. In other words, we want to go down in history as being a great people, a mighty people. And so they all came together and they begin to build the cities in the land of Shinar. And of course they are building a tower unto heaven, not to worship God, but to worship the heavens. So they began to worship creation rather than the Creator. And it is a direct act of disobedience, blatant disbelief against God, and instead of filling the earth, they do just the opposite. Also, hold your place here, and let's turn to Romans chapter 1. Let's see how they did with human governments. Now, when we think of government, we are under government ourselves, and there have been laws instituted in our Constitution and Bill of Rights. And what are those laws for? For what purpose? Gary? Very good. So we don't have anarchy. So those laws serve a purpose. They keep peace and order in the land. And when they are broken, justice should be administered. So laws prevent anarchy, and they govern us to really keep us in order. And they should have the purpose of being a deterrent to keep us from committing murders and rapes and crimes and stealings and so forth. Well, that was the case when God originally instituted. That's what He intended, that government would govern man to keep him from sin. Well, let's see how they did. Now, Romans chapter 1 is equivalent with these chapters, Genesis 8 through Genesis 11. Romans chapter 1 is referring to the time of the Tower of Babel. So we're talking about the same time frame Paul is in Romans 1. Well, let's see how they did. Verse 21, Romans 1. Because that when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful, but they became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. So they turned from God, they didn't glorify Him or thank Him, but they became vain in their imaginations, and they started building towers to heaven, which really were observatories, whereby they could observe the movement of the planets and the stars. And, of course, this is where the zodiac and the horoscope began to be corrupted and used to govern the lives of men. Now, you'd be amazed, even down to this very day, how many people won't begin their day without first consulting their horoscopes. Let me say this, horoscopes are not ordained of God, they're ordained of the devil. And they had their beginning back here at the Tower of Babel. Remember, these ancient people weren't ignorant people. They were very intelligent people in the sciences and in the arts. And they had many advancements that even scholars today marvel at. In verse 23, and they change the glory of the uncorruptible God into the image made like to corruptible man and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. In other words, they started worshiping idols. Well, let's see how they did with their morals. You know, we have laws in our land against immorality. Now, our state has tampered with them, and they're changing them, and now it's permissive. But originally, the law of our land was very, very rigid against immorality and indecent exposure. And that's how government should be, and that's how the original form of government was. But here, as we go down to verse 24, wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts and to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshiped and served the creation more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up to vile affections, for even their women did change their natural use, that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of women, burned in their lust one towards another. And, of course, that's homosexuality. Immorality is the reference there. Well, let's see how they did in the laws of the land. Verse 29. Being filled, now notice, filled, and the word filled there has the idea of a way of life. This became a way of life to these people. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envying and what? Murder. So here we begin to learn that they had disobeyed what God had originally intended. These laws and this government was to govern man, that man through it could honor and glorify God, and it would keep peace and order upon the earth, among the cities and the nations. But instead it turned into total chaos and havoc. And instead of it being a form that brought man to God, it ended up being just about disregarded. And they failed. Miserably did they fail under this dispensation. And they started serving themselves. Now let's go back to Genesis 11. Now after failure comes judgment. God has put them through the paces. He's tested them, and they have failed. He's dispensed what his will was. He gave them the responsibility to carry it out. They failed, and ultimately judgment is to follow. And as we drop down to verse 5 of Genesis 11, and the Lord came down to see the city and the Tyre, which the children of men built. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will restrain them which they have imagined to do. Remember what Paul said in Romans? They became vain in their imaginations. Go to, let us go down there, confound their language, and they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from hence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all of the earth, and from hence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of the earth. Now just in reading that, we see that God comes down, he observes, the entire Trinity observes the deeds and the affairs of men. They witness all the people gathered together. Here they are building a metropolis, and they're building these altars and tires of worship, and God judges them by confounding their language. So here is where all the different languages and dialects of the earth come from. Here is where all the different races of the earth come from. It is at the Tower of Babel that we begin to see the origination of all the races and the different languages of the earth. Now, as that judgment falls upon mankind, what did it do? What they have to stop doing, first of all? They had to stop building. Why? They couldn't understand one another. Well, I'll tell you, that fixed them real good, didn't it? And it just cooked their goose. They couldn't even communicate with one another. You know, the mason couldn't get the carpenter to understand what he wanted and vice versa. And so, frustration, just threw their hands up and they just left. Now, what else did the do? What other purposes served here by God confounding their languages? That's right. God spreads them out because they couldn't communicate with one another. And here is one talking Hebrew and one talking English and one talking Greek. Now, what do you suppose those different peoples began to do? What would you do? If you were an English-speaking person and everybody else is speaking all different languages around you. That's right. You find somebody that speaks your language. And so they started looking through the multitude and they found the ones they could communicate with. And what did they naturally do? They started gathering together in small groups, and really we start to see emerging here the nations for the first time. And so now we have the Greeks and we have the Hebrews over here, we have the English over here, the Russian over here. And from there, we see the nations are beginning to be formed. And naturally, they're not going to settle right beside each other for the most part. They, as the scriptures say, they scatter abroad. And they begin to move to different parts of the earth and the land masses at that time. And there, of course, is how the nations and the languages came to be. And so God judged them by confounding their language. Now, here is something that is very important to remember. The biggest barrier between mankind is not the races, but it's what? The language. The language is the biggest barrier we have with the peoples of the earth. And that's a barrier that still stands to this very day, and it's hard to overcome. And if you've traveled to a foreign country, you know exactly what I'm referring to. And so here then, the judgment falls, and the age of the nations comes to a close, and God is going to move on to the next age, which is going to be the age of the Jewish nation. Now, it's interesting that out of human government, just about everything continues on for a while. The fear of the animals, of man, continues all the way out to the age of the kingdom. Government goes clear out to eternity. Now, after the flood, there is season, there is spring and summer and fall and winter. God promises he will never flood the earth again with water. Now, that, of course, is going to continue all the way out to the eternal state. Then we have the blood sacrifices that was offered by Noah. That will continue until the dispensation of grace. And be fruitful and multiply, reinstituted, goes all the way out. Even things that were dispensed by God in judgment, the languages and the races, still remain unto our day. So you can begin to see the importance of dispensationalism. And you can, just from our boards here, see things that have been left behind that don't pertain to us any way, shape, or form today. But yet there are many vital things that God revealed way, way back here in what we call ancient history that are still very pertinent and binding yet in our day. So this is why I say, when God dispenses something, we have to determine, has it been left behind, or does it travel all the way through to our day? And of course, many of the commands do.